With a house in such a desirable location, I couldn't imagine that the estate would have given it away. Somebody had to have put up the money. But who and why? Yes, I could concede that someone could have donated that much simply for the sake of housing homeless teens. But donating that amount under the table, with no fanfare, no recognition, with a picture in the newspaper handing over an oversized check? Knowing the people in this town? I didn't think so. Something, I thought darkly, was going on that no one knew about. And recalling what Hazel Marie had told me when this first started, I wondered who it had been who'd asked if Mr. Pickens would sell Sam's old house. He had been the first to be approached about selling out, and now somebody had an eye on the Pickrell house, and on Jan Osborne's, too. Who would want to buy a house, much less three houses, one on either side of and one behind a group home housing half a dozen semi-delinquent teenagers? And not only who, but why? But maybe I consoled myself it was all just gossip. Speculation run wild, as rumors were apt to do in Abbotsville. Chapter 36. Just as I was about to give up and get out the paper, ribbons, scotch tape, and scissors to begin wrapping Christmas presents, Hazel Marie called.
Miss Julia, I'm so upset I don't know what to do. And J.D. is in Virginia and won't be home until the end of the week, and I hate to tell him when he does get home.
Picturing an influx of teenage boys lined up to move into the house next door, I asked, "What in the world, Hazel Marie? What's happened now?"
"Well," she said with a great sigh, "let me sit down before I fall down. It's something I would have never imagined happening, and J.D. is going to be beside himself."
"What? What is it?"
"Well," she said again, "I'd just put the girls down for a nap when Mr. Pickrell, you know he's our neighbor who lives right behind the Cochran house. You know him, don't you?"
"I know who he is. What did he want?"
"Oh, Miss Julia, he came over to tell us,
although I know he knew J.D. wasn't home. And now that I think of it, that's probably why he came when he did." "Tell you what, Hazel Marie, get to the point. What's going on?"
"He sold his house. He said he feels real bad about it, but that some agent showed up yesterday and made him a one-time take-it-or-leave-it offer. Mr. Pickrell said that it was a pretty low offer, but the agent told him that a group home in the neighborhood devalues the whole area, so he thinks he'd better do it while he can because the agent pointed out that when a bunch of kids move in, he'll be lucky to sell it at all. And you know, Miss Julia, that his wife isn't well, bedridden, in fact, and he hopes to be able to buy into one of the retirement complexes where she'll get lifetime care. So I guess I can't blame him, but J.D. will."
"Worry about him when he gets home. Right now, what we need to know is who's buying it. Who would want something not even on the market and needing work, too? To say nothing of having a house full of teenagers in the backyard."
"I don't know who it could be," Hazel Marie said, defeat obvious in her voice. "I asked Mr. Pickrell, and all he said was that it was somebody representing a holding company, whatever that is."
A holding company, I thought, but knew no more about such a thing than Hazel Marie did. But it sounded to me as if certain cards were being held awfully close to somebody's chest. But then, I have a naturally suspicious nature. "I'll ask Sam," I said. "He'll know. But listen, Hazel Marie, to be on the safe side, why don't you call your other neighbor, Mrs. Osborne, and tell her about Mr. Pickrell? I'd like to know if the same person approached her."
"That's a good idea. I'll do that right now and call you back."
Hazel Marie hung up, and I stood there, waiting for the phone to ring again, all thought of wrapping presents left by the wayside. I snatched up the phone when it rang some 20 minutes later.
"Miss Julia?"
Hazel Marie asked, as if I might have been someone else. Jan Osborne said it was some lawyer from Asheville who made an offer for her house. He told her he was representing a group who was interested in buying old houses, but she doesn't remember the name of it. Hazel Marie paused, then said, "She said his offer was so stunning that she didn't hear anything else he said."
"Stunning how? Too little or too much?"
"Well, it didn't sound too much to me, but it was more than she expected. She said she's decided to accept because it needs a new roof and a new furnace, which she can't afford. And on top of that, she said it's an answer to prayer because she's been so worried about her daughter being next door to all those boys." "Miss Julia," Hazel Marie paused, then in a quavery voice said,
I don't know what to think. First Madge moving in and now the Pickerels and Jan Osborne moving out. What is going on?"
"Madge isn't selling, is she? Now that would have been a shocker."
"No, I guess not, but it sounds like something's going on with the rest of the block."
"It sounded like it to me, too. What about your other neighbors?"
"There's only the Tudor house on the far corner behind the Osborne house. The Winsteads live there, but their last child is in college, so they could be thinking of downsizing."
"Which means they could be tempted to sell if an offer came along." "Hazel Marie," I said, a light beginning to come on, "it sounds to me that somebody wants that whole block. Thank goodness that you and Mr. Pickens bought the empty lot behind your house. You own a third of the block. Whoever is sneaking around trying to buy up everything will be stopped cold when you won't sell. The question is, why? Why would anybody want it? Especially with a group home right in the middle of it. I mean, we all thought that it would make the properties around it less desirable, but it seems to have done just the opposite."
"I don't know, Miss Julia," she said, "and I could just cry."
"Well, don't do that. What you have to do is hold on tight. Do not sell, regardless of what you're offered. We have to find out who wants it and what they want it for."
"Sam,"
I asked as we finished lunch, "what's a holding company?" He looked up in surprise.
"A holding company? Where did that come from?"
"Well, that's what I want to know, what it is and where it's coming from."
"Well, the holding company is a company that holds enough stock, real estate, or patents in other companies, not to actually run those companies, but to control their policies and management. The owners receive certain tax benefits and protection of their personal assets."
Looking slightly askance at me, he went on,
"Then there are certain entities called personal holding companies, which are limited to 5 or fewer individuals, which operate pretty much the same way, only on a smaller scale."
"Like that man in Omaha?"
"Hardly," he said, laughing. "I think he'd qualify for something a little larger. Why are you asking?"
"Somebody is buying up property around the Cochran house. The Pickerels are selling. Jan Osborne is on the verge of it, and Hazel Marie thinks the Winsteads might sell. And you remember that somebody's already approached Mr. Pickens about selling his house. And," I went on, "Binky thinks it's possible that someone may have bought the Cochran house and donated it to Madge Taylor and her crew. I'm wondering if that same someone could be who's trying to buy up the rest of the block. And if so, why would they have already given one house away?"
"Well, now," Sam said, looking off into space as he thought about it, "that is interesting. I don't know, honey, but you're right. It doesn't make sense for the same people to buy up everything around a property they've already given away. But, of course, they could have just rented it to Madge."
Then, as if he'd just thought of the possibility, he asked,
"You think Pickens would sell?"
"I hate to think that he would. They love that house. It has special meaning to Hazel Marie because it was yours, and probably to Mr. Pickens, too. But he could get mad enough to do it if the commissioners grant Madge a variance. If they do,
and somebody comes along and offers him a good price, he'd have little reason not to.
Or he could get mad enough to refuse any offer out of spite. He might decide to stay just to be a thorn in the flesh of that group home.
I nodded.
You can never tell about him, that's for sure. I just wish we could find out who wants all those houses and why they want them. It's putting a whole different light on everything.
I doubt it's the houses they want, Sam said, whoever they are. More likely it's the property they're after. But even that makes no sense with the Cochran house right in the middle of it. And if it was a gift to the Homes for Teens, I can't see Madge Taylor and her board giving it up.
Unless, I said, she gets an offer over and above what it's worth. If they made it worth her while, she'd take the money and run to another neighborhood without one thought of uprooting those wayward boys she's so concerned about. Sam smiled.
Not getting a little cynical, are we?
I smiled back. No more than usual, as you should know.
Oh, Sam, I moaned, leaning my head on my hand. It's getting too much for me. I've tried to make amends with Madge, to work with her in some way, but she's so convinced that she's in the right that there's no talking to her. And another thing, as if that wasn't enough, Lloyd is tutoring a freshman in algebra, and I think that child's not being looked after.
Then I told him about Freddie Pruitt and how Lloyd was seeing that he got breakfast on their tutoring days. Could you find out what his home situation is?
Wouldn't Lloyd know?
I'm not sure. I get the feeling that he's protective of Freddie, so he might not want to talk about him, if he even knows anything. Freddie himself might not say much. Deprived children can be ashamed to admit they're in need, you know.
Sam nodded. That's probably true. But sure, I'll look around, ask a few questions, and see if the boy's being cared for. I'll start with the Department of Social Services, maybe find out if they have him in their sights.
Oh, my word. DSS is Madge's bailiwick. I wouldn't want her to know anything about this. She might accuse us of trespassing on her territory.
Sam laughed. She just might at that. But don't worry, I'll be most circumspect.
Just so you're cautious about who you ask and what you say. I wouldn't want to embarrass the boy or his family, if he has one.
Chapter 37 Try as I might to get into it, the Christmas spirit kept deluding me. Sacks, shopping bags, and boxes were piled up in the guest room waiting to be wrapped and placed under the tree, and I just turned my head whenever I passed it on my way downstairs. Too many worries and concerns were tumbling around in my head to be waylaid by mundane chores. One after the other they flashed through my mind. Hazel Marie, Mr. Pickens, Helen, Thurlow, Freddie Pruitt, and most of all, Madge and her non-profit group, which was supposed to be an asset to homeless boys, but so far had done nothing but put the entire area in the loss column. Even now it was denuding the neighborhood. First the Pickrells, then the Osbornes, and maybe soon the Winsteads all seemed to be bailing out. Who could be buying those houses? A holding company? And what could a holding company want with them? Soon the only occupants left on that sizable city block would be the Pickenses and a pseudo-foster family in the Cochran house. So would this secret holding company fix up the other houses and rent them out or resell them for a higher price? Because let's face it, there would have to be money made in some form or fashion. Neither people nor companies just buy up houses out of the goodness of their hearts and do nothing with them. There had to be some deep, dark game plan behind it all. And then I had it. No, not the game plan, but the thread that would unravel everything. The Cochran house.
That's what had started it all, and that's what held the key. The presence of a group home in the middle of the block devalued all the other houses. Nobody wanted to live next to it. Yet even with that knowledge, somebody was luring the neighbors into selling, letting them think that they were getting out while the getting was good before the Cochran house was occupied by a swarm of teenage boys. Only J.D. Pickens was refusing to succumb. And how long would that last?
But wait. Even if he finally gave in and sold Sam's old house, how would this secret group get rid of Madge and her group? That house would still be a sore thumb to whoever owned the rest of the block. But if, and by this time my mind was running at high speed, if someone had deliberately and with malice aforethought donated that house to the Homes for Teens group in order to devalue the other houses, could it then be undonated? That's what I had to find out. Who actually owned the Cochran house? I'd never get a straight answer from Madge, so I might as well give up on her. The Register of Deeds at the county courthouse. Or would it be at City Hall? I didn't know, but Sam would, and so would Binky. And if some deed book on some shelf somewhere indicated that the Board of the Homes for Teens was the legitimate owner, that same board might be in line for a truckload of money after they'd played their part in getting rid of J.D. Pickens and his family. And after that, who knew what was planned next? But it seemed as plain as day that somebody wanted that entire block stripped clean of single-family residences. And if that was the case, Madge was in for a rude awakening because after she'd done her job, unbeknownst to her, perhaps, of running off the neighbors, she'd be gotten rid of, too. I flew, well, as fast as I could manage, up the stairs to the sunroom where Sam had his office. With a tap on the door, I opened it and went in. "Sam, sorry to bother you, but could you go to the courthouse for me?" He looked at me from over his glasses.
"Right now?"
"Yes. Well, as soon as you can. Listen, I think we need to find out exactly who owns the Cochran house. I'm wondering if that holding company bought the Cochran house, then donated it to Madge's group, and if so, it wouldn't still be listed as the owner, would it? Wouldn't it now be listed as owned by Madge and her board?" Sam nodded.
"If it's been donated with a free and clear title to Madge's group, then yes, they'd be listed as owners."
"But," I said, leaning over his desk in my eagerness, "what if it's still in the name of the holding company? Don't you see, Sam? If that company still owns it, that means they can evict Madge any time they want to, which would be right after the Winsteads and the Pickenses sell out."
"So," Sam said, snatching off his reading glasses, "you're thinking there's a devious reason behind situating a group home where it is."
"It's the only thing that makes sense, and I'm ready to raise the roof about it. Whether or not Madge has been in on it from the start, I don't know. I'm inclined to think that she hasn't, but who knows? But if she hasn't, the only profit that non-profit is going to bring her is a lesson learned the hard way."
"Mm-hmm," Sam said, rubbing his hand across his mouth as he thought about it. "And getting a variance on the zoning would be the icing on the cake. To Pickens, it would mean his final move had been cut off, and he'd have to live next door to a group home and go through years of courtroom wrangling or sell out."
Sam stacked some papers and put them aside. He stood up then, before turning, suddenly stopped short.
"Zoning variance," he said,
almost under his breath, but looking as if a light bulb had lit up in his head.
"Julia, depending on the kind of variance they get, if the commissioners grant one, anything and everything could go up on that block."
"You mean," I asked, beginning to understand, "something worse than a group home?"
"It's possible. I hate to think in terms of a conspiracy, but depending on how the variance is worded, it could open up a whole new can of worms."
He came around the desk then and put his hand on my arm.
But we're getting ahead of ourselves. There's one fly in the ointment for them. Neighborhood approval is required for a variance, and no way in the world will Pickens give his approval.
Oh, goodness! I wish I'd known that, I said, wondering what other little twists of the law I didn't know. It would have saved me a whole lot of worry and time. So, I went on to be sure I fully understood the requirements, as long as one neighbor withholds his approval, the commissioners can't grant a variance?
Well, we'll see. If one entity, that holding company, owns everything on the block except the Pickens property, that might outweigh his disapproval. It could depend on what their intentions are. If they're planning something that the commissioners see as a benefit to the town, who knows what they'll do? Comes down to this, honey. How much money and how much time it would take to carry the fight through the courts, it'd be Pickens who'd be left to do it by himself.
No, we'd help.
I know, but it could be a long, drawn-out process. It's even possible that in the long run we'd be glad Madge Taylor is so determined to stay there.
Oh, my goodness, I said, thinking that I'd better sit myself down. That means that Mr. Pickens and Madge would be on the same side, both fighting a takeover. He'd certainly have to change his tune if that's the way it turns out. Sam, we have to find out who's doing what and why.
I think so, too. I should be able to find who the owner is online if the deed has been registered, which it ought to have been by now. But no, I'm going myself to the courthouse and see it in writing.
Well, while you're there, find out who's in that holding company, too.
That may take some time. The names will be registered with the North Carolina Secretary of State, which may mean a trip to Raleigh. I'm not sure that's accessible online.
Going to Raleigh, if that's what it takes, may be worth it, I said, wanting him to say that he didn't mind going. Instead, he shook his head.
Can't for a couple of days, at least. The Rotary Club has asked me to do a slide program of my trip on Thursday.
What a nice compliment to you, Sam. I'm sure it'll be wonderful and most informative. But I was disappointed. I badly wanted to find out who was behind the block takeover and find out as soon as possible. But then a few light bulbs began going off in my head. Listen, Sam, whoever is doing this has really played their cards right. I've had the feeling all along that the commissioners would be hard-pressed to turn down a variance for something as worthy as a home for homeless children. I'm convinced that they'll grant it, because if they don't, the members of those seven churches will rake them over the coals, and that's a lot of voters to displease. Why, they might even protest in the streets, and how would that look?
Sam grinned. Not too good when they're asking for votes. But, he went on, instead of granting a variance for that one house, the commissioners could know something that we don't. Depending on who's playing those cards you mentioned, they could simply rezone the entire block to permit not only a group home, but who knows what else.
Well, that possibility certainly didn't settle my nerves. Too antsy to even think of wrapping gifts, I tried to wait patiently for Sam to return with the enlightening news of exactly who was behind the ruination of Hazel Marie's happy home. I started to call her just to have something to do, but decided not to. Anything I could tell her about our current suspicions would only add to her worries. Better to wait until we knew something definite. So I wandered around the house, going in and out of the kitchen so many times that Lillian finally said,
"You need to find yourself something to do."
"I know it," I said, coming to rest on a chair at the kitchen table. My mother used to say, "Idle hands are the devil's workshop," and I guess, interrupted by the ringing of the phone, I jumped up to answer it, hoping Sam was calling with news too big to hold in. Instead, it was Luann who at least gave me something else to think of.
Julia?
She said, sounding just a little unsure of herself, or of me, I don't know which.
Yes, of course it's me. What's going on, Luann? Is everything all right?
Oh, she said as if she suddenly realized she had something to say.
I'm sorry, I just have a lot on my mind, but I called to see if you'd be interested in joining a prayer group. You know, with Christmas approaching and all, I mean, it would be good for us to center our minds on what's important at this time of the year, you know, so we don't get bogged down with all the commercialization and so forth.
Well, I don't know. There's so much to do, and
that's exactly the wrong attitude,
Luann said, much more firmly.
What's more important than taking a few minutes to engage in prayer?
I guess if you put it that way,
I certainly do. Now listen, we're going to meet at the church in the bride's room next to the chapel, just a few of us, and there'll be comfortable chairs there, and it's quiet and conducive. Nobody will bother us, so we're going to meet at 10 o'clock tomorrow for 30 minutes or so. No lessons or anything, just prayer requests and silent prayer. Then somebody will give a closing prayer, and that'll be it. But it'll help us put first things first, which we tend to forget in all the rushing around getting ready for Christmas. I think it'll make a difference for the entire season. Say you'll come, Julia, will you?
Well, yes, of course I will. I'm really not all that busy, and anybody can find time for prayer, or ought to, anyway. Who all will be there?
Oh, just a few. Whoever can get away, to start with, anyway.
One thing, though, I said. I don't want to have the closing prayer. I'd worry about what I was going to say all the time I was supposed to be praying silently.
I know what you mean, Luann said, seemingly with relief. See you then. 10 o'clock tomorrow. Don't forget.
I won't, and thanks for thinking of me. I hung up, still wondering, conducive to what?
Chapter 38. It had earlier crossed my mind to invite Mildred to go with me to the prayer group, but by the next morning I hadn't gotten around to doing it and knew it was too late. Mildred didn't like to be rushed around in the mornings and usually refused any invitation to anything before noon anyway. Still, I wished that I had, for the company, you know, and at the same time wished that I'd turned it down. I didn't know who would be there other than Luann, and it might well turn into a round robin of passing along gossip by way of prayer requests, with only a minute or two of prayer. I now thought of a dozen excuses I could have used. Presents to wrap, Lillian needed menus and shopping lists, Sam wanted me to do something with him, and on and on. Luann would have never known the difference, although the Lord would have. He, however, was more forgiving than she was. Actually, the real reason that I wasn't eager to go was because of the news that Sam had brought back from the Register of Deeds office the previous afternoon. All I wanted to do was sit and ponder the impact of learning that Madge and her group of do-gooders were either renters or the beneficiaries of someone's generosity. They certainly were not the owners of the Cochrane House, for something called the Ridgetop Corporation held fast to the title. That meant that Madge and company had to be either benefiting from a gift, which I doubted because of the lack of public acclaim, or renting. How I would have loved to have seen the lease. How much was the monthly rent? Were the board members making the payments out of their own pockets? It was unlikely that they'd be getting state funds before any teenagers had actually been housed. And normally, when you rent something, you pay both the first and last months up front, which could amount to a tidy sum. Just where, I wondered, was the money coming from? I had no answers, so I put on my coat, told Lillian I wouldn't be gone for more than an hour, and left the house thinking these thoughts and more. Surely, I assured myself, spending 30 minutes or so in prayer would be more beneficial than pacing the floor, wondering what could be done about the Cochrane House. Fighting a brisk wind as I crossed Polk Street and hurried toward the back entrance to the church, I determined to focus my thoughts entirely on laying my concerns before the Lord. Silently, of course, for I was not interested in a group discussion, a group anything if you want to know the truth. I walked through the large, empty fellowship hall where Wednesday night suppers were held, went past a few Sunday school rooms, and rode the elevator up to the chapel extension. As I walked toward the bride's room, I saw Luann waiting for me at the door of the lovely room, provided for last-minute touches to a bride's veil and train before her grand entrance.
"There you are," Luann said, looking at her watch. "I thought you'd changed your mind."
"Why, Luann," I said, "it's not yet 10 o'clock. I didn't get the time wrong, did I?"
"Oh, no, no, you didn't. It's just that everybody else got here early."
She reached for the doorknob, but before turning it, while I wondered why the door was closed in the first place, she said,
"Now, Julia, remember that this is silent prayer, and others have already started, so let's just enter quietly, take a seat, and immediately bow our heads."
That suited me. My eyes were already heavy. So I followed her into the room, keeping my head down so as not to disturb anyone, and found a seat on the far side. With head bowed and eyes lowered, I nonetheless glanced at the others seated in a small circle around the room and wondered what I was doing there. Perhaps, I thought to myself, this was the Lord working in mysterious ways, his wonders to perform, for besides Luann, there were Lynette Rucker, Lorna McKenzie, Marinelle Warner, Diane Jarrett, whose rubber-soled shoes I recognized, and of all people, Madge Taylor. Well, maybe after Madge had engaged in a period of prayer, she'd be willing to listen to reason, which would be one of those mysterious wonders. Still, I wondered why none of the usual suspects, as Mildred called Sue and Carrie and Helen and Rebecca and Emma Sue and the like, were meeting with us. With a sudden grating clearing of her throat, interrupting my heavenward chain of thought, Madge told me. "Julia," she said, leaning forward, "I hope you won't think we're ganging up on you, but there are a number of us who are deeply concerned about your lack of compassion, which I readily admit is totally unlike you, and I hope you'll take it in the spirit in which it's meant, because we all care enough to try to help you before you go off the deep end." My head had jerked up when she'd said my name. I was stunned to be so addressed, and in public, too. Looking around at all the piously concerned faces turned now toward me, I could only mumble a question. "Off the deep end of what?" "Your Christian witness," Madge replied firmly. "Yes," Lynette Rucker chimed in. "When we first moved here, you were held up as an example I would do well to follow. But, and I hate to say this, but it now seems that you're headed down a track that has to be displeasing to our Lord." I felt my face redden at being singled out. They were all watching me, and especially at being openly criticized by the preacher's wife, who was not only half my age, but unaware of her teetering position on the social ladder. Who did she think made possible that Prada bag in her lap? "And Julia," Lorna McKenzie said, catching her breath as her words dripped with solicitude, "you don't know how it hurts our efforts to provide a home for little boys when you are so vocal in your opposition. It's really most unbecoming of you. You really should..." "Is that what this is about?" I demanded as a surge of anger swept through me. "To talk me into supporting that ill-advised and misplaced group home?" I got to my feet, turned to Luann, and said, "You said this was to be a time of prayer, but that was just a ruse to get me here, wasn't it? Well, let me tell you." "Oh, no," Diane Jarrett said, an imploring note in her voice. "It's about more than Madge's efforts. We want to open your eyes to the need in this county. Why, Julia, did you know that we have almost 200 children without a regular place to sleep at night? And more than that, who don't get a hot breakfast and have to be fed at school?"
That's right, Lynette added, and we don't understand how you can turn your back on even the few that Madge is helping. It just breaks my heart to get into bed at night and think of all those children with no place to lay their heads.
Lynette, I said, you can play Lady Bountiful all you want, but you'd do well to show a little sense while you're doing it. I happen to know that you have two guest rooms in your house that are empty about 350 nights of the year. Now, I went on, if any of you are actually interested in praying, I suggest you stop with the personal attacks and get started.
Oh, no, Lynette said again, not knowing when to stop. We're not attacking you personally, Miss Julia. At least I'm not. I just want to counsel with you.
If you want to counsel anybody, Lynette, I snapped, then get a degree. And to the rest of you, get the beams out of your own eyes before criticizing anybody else. And furthermore, some of you, I said, turning to stare at Madge and thinking of my mohawk carpet, would do well to tend to the problems in your own homes, because...
Please don't be upset,
Mary Nell Warner said, rudely interrupting me. Rounding on her, I noted that her tightly set hair had a recent bluing. It didn't do one thing for her.
We care for you, Julia, she said quickly, holding out her hand to stop me, and we hate seeing you so dead set against a home for those so much in need. You are well known in town, and your attitude is turning others against us. We just want to reason with you and admonish you in the name of the Lord, as Scripture tells us to do, when a brother or a sister goes astray.
Waves of anger washed up in my soul, and if I ever needed prayer, I needed it then. Let me ask you something, Mary Nell, I said, glaring at her. If you're so concerned about homeless teenagers, why aren't you fostering a teenage boy in your own home?
I couldn't do that, she said, drawing back. I'm a widow, and, well... It wouldn't look right.
Believe me, Mary Nell, I said, hardly knowing what I was saying by this time, no one would think a thing of it.
Well, and here's something else, Madge said in a strident tone. Even if you couldn't bring yourself to help us, it seems like you could have kept it to yourself. Instead, you've done nothing but talk about us and work against us and stir up others to question our motives. And I know you did it, especially that tea you had, on purpose, just to hurt us. But it wasn't us that you hurt. It was the children. We are well aware that some of the neighbors are unhappy, but you need to understand that what we are doing is for the greater good. By putting your personal friends before needy children... You're doing a disservice to the whole community.
Well, Madge, I said, turning to her, because if anyone was the ringleader, she fit the bill. If you'd opened that house in an area where it was permitted, you'd have had no problem from me. But when you ignore the laws and act as if they don't apply to you, what can you expect? Then, with a sudden upsurge of confidence and a good bit of self-righteousness, I said, "Thank you all for thinking that I have enough influence in this town to affect the outcome of your efforts. I didn't know that I was succeeding in getting that group home moved from its untenable location. However," I went on, trembling inside but determined to have my say, I do admit that your stated intent to have a prayer time was an excellent one, yet so far I've not seen or heard anybody praying. So if this is the way you plan to run that group home... Foster home, Madge said firmly. Foster my foot. All you're doing is warehousing boys and paying someone to do what none of you will do yourselves. Not a one of you would take a needy child into your own home, which, I remind you, I have done. So don't sit there criticizing me and feeling all self-righteous about it. Luann, looking stricken by now, said,
Don't be mad, Julia. We just about time you chimed in, Luann, I said, turning toward her.
Where's all that prayer you used to get me here? But since you started all this, for the greater good, I'm sure, why don't you lead us in a closing prayer?
Oh, she said, cringing back in her chair. I can't do that. You know I don't pray out loud. But, Julia, don't be mad at us. We all love you and admire you, and we thought that if we staged an intervention...
An intervention? A white rage flashed through my brain. I don't know why putting a name to this public humiliation was so devastating, but it was. Was that your idea, Luann? No, Madge said, and I give her credit for bravery because I was dangerously furious by this time. No, it was mine, but Luann was all for it. Julia, we want you with us, not against us. We need everybody who is anybody to be with us. Part of our mission statement is our desire to be inclusive of all attitudes and viewpoints. Well, let me tell you something, Madge. Your mission statement can be as inclusive as you want, but... I took a deep breath, clutched my pocketbook under my arm, and strode to the door. Then I turned back and glared at each one of them. You can include me out. And Luann, you can try to be all things to all people if you want to, but the next one in line for an intervention may be you. And I hope you notice that the one person who has every right to call me to task is not here. At least Helen had the grace not to attend, didn't she? And with that, I went out the door and shut it firmly behind me, and would have locked it if I'd had the key. Chapter 39 Fuming from the humiliating criticism to which I'd just been subjected by people barely on the edge of my circle of friends, I stomped my way home. Suffering from embarrassment, shame, and more than a little anger, especially at Luann, I headed straight upstairs, unable to tell even Lillian what had happened. Gradually, though, as I sat on the side of the bed reliving the past hour, I realized that there was one thing that would keep my head held high. Not one of my close friends, excepting Luann, had been there. Had they approached Mildred, Hazel, Marie, Binky, Sue, Helen, and a few others and been turned down by each of them? With Luann involved, I was sure that they'd been asked to participate, which tells you right there who my true friends were. As for Luann, what could I say? I had no doubt that the whole idea of doing an intervention started with Madge, and Luann would not have been able to resist being a part of it. She always wanted to be included, no matter what it was. She didn't want to be left out. Well, too bad, because she'd just been struck off my dance card. But Helen, I thought, with deep regret. She'd done the striking off of me, and I couldn't blame her. Now that I'd borne the brunt of a public critique, I was even more ashamed for my part in criticizing her. Helen and I had never been close, drop by any time friends, but then she'd never been that close to anyone. Serene and self-contained was the way I mentally described her, and I admired her for it. She had accepted the ups of her well-ordered life with grace and cool entitlement. Then when her husband had been imprisoned for embezzlement, she'd accepted the downs with the same equanimity. She'd divorced him, sold her perfectly appointed home on which she'd lavished care and money, and moved into an inexpensive condominium, and done it all without bemoaning her fate or crying on anyone's shoulder. As I thought of Helen and what she'd been through, my heart melted with the memory of the injustice we'd done her. I now knew how she'd felt at being wrongly accused, judged, and convicted. I could only marvel that she'd refused to turn the tables on me. Snatching up the phone by the bed, I punched in the number, and as soon as Mildred answered, I demanded, "Did you know about it?"
Oh, my goodness, did they actually do it?
So you knew.
I knew they were having a hard time getting anybody to join them. It was Luann, of course, doing the dirty work, and I was going to warn you, but she told me they were aiming for sometime next week, because so many had other plans. I'm sorry, Julia. I thought they'd given up when nobody would participate, and you'd never have had to know.
Well, they didn't,
and I went over to the church thinking it was for a prayer meeting.
I am so, so sorry. I should have warned you, but I really didn't think it would amount to anything. You know how flighty Luann is. As long as she's not left out, she'll jump onto anything. But I told her in no uncertain terms that she ought to watch who she associates with.
Who all was there?
When I told her, Mildred said,
"Well, see, they had to get people you hardly know. I wouldn't even call it an intervention with that group. Sounds more like a kangaroo court than anything."
"Well," I said, my shoulders slumping, "at least they didn't accuse me of anything I haven't done. It was all about that group home, Mildred. Apparently my attitude toward it is lacking in compassion, and what's more, I'm influencing others to withhold their support." I managed a small laugh. "I didn't know I was able to do that, but I'm trying to take it as encouraging news."
"You should," Mildred assured me. "It means you're having an effect on all that high-handedness that's going on. So now I'm just waiting for somebody to try to intervene with me. I'm beginning to feel left out."
"Oh, Mildred, don't make me laugh. Nobody in their right mind would try an intervention with you. You'd lay them low, and I wish that I had your way with words so I could have done the same thing." Instead, I was too stunned to say much of anything. "Although," I mused aloud as I recalled the disturbing episode, "I might have managed to cast a few arrows. Not that they'll do much good."
"But listen, let me tell you what Sam found out at the Register of Deeds." And I went on to tell her of the precarious hold that Madge and the Board of Homes for Teens apparently had on the Cochrane house. Mildred was silent for a minute. Then she asked,
"So you think they're just renting it?"
"I have no idea. But it's either that or this Ridgetop Corporation is letting them have it rent-free. Either way, it's possible, even likely, that they're being used to run off the other residents on that block, which they're well on their way to doing. Then the homes for teens could be evicted."
"Oh, my goodness," Mildred said, catching her breath.
"Then there really is a master plan for that block.
We've got to find out who the members of Ridgetop are and what it aims to do, because if it's true, and the Pickenses and the Winsteads keep holding out, they could be in for a world of trouble."
"That's exactly what I've been thinking. But how can we find out?"
"I'll tell you one thing that'll tell us something," Mildred said. "If we knew what the commissioners were going to do, we'd be in better shape to fight it. If they're in the mood to grant a variance for a group home, they may go a step further and rezone the entire block."
"Do you really think so? Would they do that?" My heart thudded in my chest as I recalled Sam mentioning that possibility. And now here was Mildred, as acute a financial finagler as I'd ever known, bringing up the same concern. And all along I'd been worried about one little house while somebody could be planning a wholesale takeover.
"That's what we need to find out," Mildred said. "Let me make some calls. I'm not without some influence in this town."
Indeed she wasn't. And as we brought our conversation to a close, I also recalled that Sam had intimated that it could be the commissioners themselves, not the powerless non-profit group, who had much more in mind than a simple variance request. One good thing about this new worry, though, was that it shoved that humiliating intervention to the back of my mind. Mildred would be reaching out to the movers and shakers who worked behind the scenes, her big-time lawyers, her bankers, her financial advisors, to see what they had heard and what they knew was being planned for our little town.
"Hazel Marie?" I said when she answered her phone. To allay her fears, I'd decided not to immediately ask what I'd called to ask, but to allow her to think I'd called just to chat. "I haven't heard much about Ronnie lately and was wondering how he was doing."
"Oh, he's fine, Miss Julia. I don't know how he puts up with the little girls like he does. They had a baby bonnet on his head yesterday, and they crawl all over him when he lies down. He never growls or barks, just lets them do whatever they want.
When he gets enough of it, he goes to sit by J.D. or in his chair if he's not here. And that's kind of like being in time out for him. He's a wonderful dog.
Well, I'm glad it's working out for all of you. Have you heard from Thurlow?
Yes, J.D. and Lloyd walked Ronnie over to visit him last Sunday afternoon. Ronnie tried to get in bed with him,
but Helen made him lie down on the floor. J.D. said that she was nervous the whole time they were there for fear he thought that Ronnie would go to the bathroom in the house. But, Miss Julia, he wouldn't do that. He's a perfect gentleman here. Of course, we do let him out on a regular basis.
I'm glad to hear it, Hazel Marie. You've certainly done a good deed by taking him in.
But listen, I was just wondering, what's going on with the Pickerels and Mrs. Osborne? Have you heard anything?
Oh, Miss Julia, they're just waiting for the closing date, but they're both beginning to pack.
Closing date? The thought flashed in my head as I realized that the deals weren't done deals yet. I had to get off the phone and call Mildred, but Hazel Marie was still talking.
I don't know what Jan Osborne is going to do, she went on, but I think she's planning to rent a place. That way she won't be responsible for repairs and so forth. She can just call her landlord.
That's probably a wise decision. But, I went on, asking the question that was on my mind, have you heard anything from the Winsteads? Do you think they've been approached?
J.D. went over last night to talk to Hal Winstead, wanting, you know, to encourage him to resist any offers. And I should have called to tell you, but I didn't know if it's good news or not. Anyway, he's been approached by the same man who's been after all of us. But J.D. says that Hal is as tough as nails. He laughed in the man's face and told him he'd have to double his offer before he'd even consider selling.
Well, that's a relief, I said, then thought better of it. Except if that holding company wants it bad enough, they might just do it.
Yes, well, J.D. said that if he and Hal Winstead keep refusing, they might eventually give up. But I don't think they will. For one thing, whoever is trying to buy them out already has a lot invested in this block, or will have when they all close, so I don't think they'll ever give up.
Tell that husband of yours that Sam has found out that something called Ridgetop Corporation is registered as the owner of the Cochran House, so it's more than likely that they're the ones after the other houses as well. But why in the world they'd want them, I can't figure out.
Oh, my goodness. A corporation? Hazel Marie said. How are we going to fight something like that? Oh, Miss Julia, what are we going to do?
I didn't know what we could do, but it just added to my determination to find out who Ridgetop was, and to find out if it was behind the establishment of a group home next door to Hazel Marie, and to find out what they had planned for a prime piece of real estate when the group home had run its course of usefulness. To that end, I brought the conversation to a close and called Mildred.
While waiting for her to get off of a conference call and thinking that getting one or two gifts wrapped was better than none, I taped a bow onto the second one and prepared to leave the guest room for dinner. A tentative knock on the door made me hurriedly stash an unwrapped gift into a sack before responding.
Yes, come in, but don't look.
Lloyd stuck his head around the door.
I won't look, but can I come in?
Of course you may. Come sit down if you can find a seat. Rolls of Christmas paper, unwrapped boxes, bows, and name tags were piled up on the bed, and the table I was using was covered with snips of paper and pieces of scotch tape. What's going on, honey?
Well, he said, pushing aside a shopping bag so he could sit on the bed. I guess I just need to talk, because I don't much know what to do.
About what? Is there a problem at school?
No, I'm not exactly. Well, I guess it's about that house next door to Mama's and what I just found out about it.
I put aside all thought of presents, Christmas or otherwise, and gave him my full attention. That house next door to his mother's house had ruled my thoughts for weeks, and now it was disrupting his thoughts.
Tell me, I said.
Well, you know Freddie Pruitt?
I nodded.
Well, he just found out that he's going to be living there,
and he wants to be happy about it, but he can't because J.D.'s fence sort of tells him something. I mean, he's happy because he'd live next door to me, but he can't be real happy because Ms. Taylor has told the boys that they have to steer clear of the neighbors. That means us. I mean, even me. And Freddie's afraid he's going to fail algebra.
Oh, for goodness sake, I said, just done in at Madge for warning the boys about their neighbors. And done in as well because they were actually moving boys in, getting themselves more firmly established without yet knowing what the commissioners had up their sleeves.
And I know, Lloyd went on, that J.D. won't like it if I invite Freddie over, even to study, because that'll open the door to all the other boys. And first thing you know, we'd have all of them in and out all day long. Maybe. I mean, I can see the problem. I don't want to hurt Freddie's feelings, but I don't want to make J.D. mad either.
I rubbed my forehead, wishing I could wring Madge Taylor's neck for putting this boy in such a situation.
I can see the problem too, honey.
When is all this taking place?
Freddie said they've been having meetings at the DSS, learning the house rules and getting to know each other, and the last he heard was they'd move in a week or so after the commissioners give him the go-ahead.
Another indication, I thought but didn't say, that Madge had known all along that she'd have no problem with the zoning.
And Freddie said, Lloyd went on, that he hopes it sooner 'cause he thinks his aunt is tired of him.
Oh, that poor child, I said, a wave of sympathy sweeping my heart. But back to your quandary. Here's a suggestion, at least for the time being. Since Mrs. Taylor has warned the boys... Wait, how many will there be?
Freddie said 6, maybe 7.
My eyes rolled back at Madge's escalation of the numbers, but I didn't say anything. All right. Since she's warned them about the neighbors, let that be your guide about inviting Freddie over. You're just following her suggestions so he won't get into trouble with her. Then, you can keep tutoring him at school or at the library. And Lloyd, I went on, we're hoping to learn more about what's going on very soon. Just be patient a little longer. There are a few of us who are looking into what can be done. We're just waiting to see what the commissioners do about the zoning. But, I thought, sooner or later the fur was going to fly because Mildred and I were making plans to pool our not inconsiderable resources, and it was to that end that she and I came to an agreement when she ended her conference call.
Chapter 40. Tuesday night in early December, and the weather had taken a turn for the worse. It was cold, and getting colder with a blustery wind that pushed itself inside sleeves and around necks, to say nothing of up one's skirt. But the commissioners were meeting at the courthouse, and as much as I hated leaving our warm house, I wouldn't have missed it for the world. The room was full when we trudged upstairs to the commissioners' meeting room. I looked around and had a sinking feeling because so few neighbors were there. There was no sign of Mr. Pickerel, or of Jan Osborne, or even the Winsteads, as two of the three were on their way out of the neighborhood, and the third was wavering. I guess it no longer mattered to any of them what the commissioners did. I smiled at Hazel Marie, and tried to at Mr. Pickens, but he had such a scowl on his face, I doubted he could have smiled back. Helen Stroud was there, and thank goodness she greeted me from across the room with a small nod. And Callie Armstrong, who didn't live close to the property in question, but who took every opportunity to leave her husband babysitting, waved at us. Binky and Coleman Bates were seated near the front, and so was Mildred, who was getting to wear her full-length mink coat that night. But the rest of the room was filled with known Madge supporters and a lot of people I didn't know, all, I assumed, from the 7 praying churches. Sam and I found seats on folding chairs that had been brought in to accommodate the crowd, and quite soon 4 of the 5 commissioners entered from the back and took their high-backed seats at a slightly elevated semicircular desk in the front of the room. A microphone was situated in front of each one, and a standing microphone faced them for the use of speakers from the floor.
By the time the meeting was called to order, the minutes read and approved, and several announcements made, I was more than ready for the main attraction. But just as I covered a yawn, Pete Hamrick, who was the